Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
Andy Jacobs.
This is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we were joined by cricket photographer Philip Brown, who talked about his excellent new book, The Colours of Cricket, with some of his best work in. He was on form, wasn't he?
He was, tremendous. And talking of cricket, we also spoke to Andy Zaltzman.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
A lot of man-cadding going on in the world of African cricket. Oh, yeah, it's a broad church, this place. And we talked about a new film, boxing film, very powerful story. The Champion of Auschwitz. We spoke to the director of that movie. We had a chat. Here it all is.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy. Yes, Andy is now with us 3 days a week, I'm very pleased to say. A couple of the listeners have been in touch. Roger Clifford says, I hope this is a sign that Andy's wife Sue's health is improving.
Yes, it is a little bit, yeah. Not too bad. So she's very keen for me to get out of the house.
Yeah, well, I would be as well. Also, Tim worries, it's good to have you back for an extra day, but he worries about the impact it'll have on the quality of the jokes in the birthday spread.
I think that's not a serious comment, is it?
Doesn't it impact your writing time, your creative?
Well,
time.
It does impact my writing time.
So, should we expect a drop in quality?
Yes.
Wow, that is saying something.
Now, I've got one excellent one for this week so far.
Out of 10. So, not a bad hit rate.
I write about 15 a week because I like to filter it down.
Wow.
You only get the best.
Really?
Actually, sometimes I leave them out because they're a bit racy. You know, that
okay,
time
for that time of year, it's the school run and all that. You've got to be careful.
I had a brilliant one for, what's his name, the skier. What's his name? Keeley. What's his name? Jean-Claude Keeley?
Okay, no, I'm not sure.
I can't remember. A famous skier, but I couldn't put it in anyway. That's by the by. Anyway, to last night's game.
Yeah, you and, were at the bridge. You went to Champions League football.
I was thinking during the match, I hope Paul's watching the goal show. It was such a terrible game.
I watched the first half of your game, and then I did cut to the goal show. Really,
I don't blame it, really.
Yeah, the full nightmare of Barca started to unfold.
The early stages of the Champions League, it's never, you know, it's always going to be a tight thing. Nobody wants to lose. Zenit were very organised, played some nice football at times.
Yeah. And had a good chance, didn't they?
Yeah, I think 1-1 would have flattered them, but we didn't really create much. And they're winning Chelsea without playing brilliantly. But one of the things I find about the Champions League is that because you have to apply for your ticket, it's not automatic. You get different people sitting there.
Yeah.
So all the regular people that you sit with aren't there, with a couple, but mostly it's different people. So there's one bloke, the typical bloke, filming the thing on his phone.
The whole game.
The start of the game, like the champ. So my son and I decided to sing the Champions League theme, which no one can sing in tune, extremely loudly behind him.
So that magic moment has been ruined by your cattle.
That's all you'll hear is that. Champions! So it'll ruin that. And then this, there are three Herberts sitting next to us, and this bloke said to my son, because they started singing Stand Up for the Champions. And you know the thing you get at football when a bloke goes, come on, mate, stand, why aren't you standing up? Standing up. So my son said, well, I've stood up for them quite a long time.
Well,
how long have you been coming here? So he said, well,
sounds like a charmer.
Since I was six. And I went, 1959, you? Then I said, where do you normally sit every week? Of course, that shut him up because he's the only came for that game.
Standing up,
really annoying, you know, but never mind. What can you do? Anthony Taylor on form as usual with a reverse Graham Pole, sending off a player with only one yellow card.
Yeah, look, these things happen. I love the fact he pointed all the places where the guy had been aiming to get a second yellow card when he not even had the first. He didn't seem too upset. He seemed to have great confidence in the system.
It's a bit like cricket umpires. You know, you've got to accept VAR and DRS. It gets you out of trouble. It's better than making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
So I think they accept it. The Wenger boys are back. Have you seen 90s pop sensation, the Wenger boys? Yeah. They want the Brits to be held twice a year.
Hey,
come on.
Come on. If only that could have got in the birthday spread.
That's actually a joke.
Yeah, it's good. It is actually a joke. We tell you what happened. When Andy wrote that down a little bit earlier on, he went, oh, that's fantastic. And I thought, I'd sent him a couple of the late, great Norm MacDonald clips, and I thought he was watching those.
Sorry.
And
I'm not as good.
And Andy said, oh, no, he was laughing at something he'd just written.
The thing is, I don't know about you, because you write a lot of funny stuff, but, I mean, if it doesn't make you laugh when you initially write it, it's probably not funny, is it? I mean, it's got to sort of tickle you a bit as you write it.
Quite a lot of sketch shows that never would have got made on that basis, I tell you.
And do you see that vegans break wind more than anybody else? Vegans.
Oh, yeah. Do they?
Yeah. It could be a problem with the ozone layer over Forest Green Rovers.
Oh, it could be bad. They could be drafting in cows to improve the air quality. It could be. That's true.
That's true. And Lewis Hamilton, do you see his outfit at the Met Ball? And,
yes, I did. Yeah, yeah.
It looks like he stood up and was still attached to the tablecloth. It's ridiculous.
That's right. He's got tucked into his kegs. In his defence, he got a whole table at it for British designers. I thought it was a very nice touch.
He's a good man, you know, but it's just his clothes sense.
Yeah.
Look, don't ask me. I mean, Sports Illustrated voted him amongst the top dressed sports people around the world. I personally can't see it. I think he looks a bit
In your menswear days when you had your shop, if you had like a suit that had one like wedding dress leg, would you have bought that when you went over to the Italian fashion?
No.
It would have been a sticker, wouldn't it? Imagine
Complete
trying to sell
sticker.
That to someone.
Nobody would buy that.
Someone comes in for a tie. You're not looking for a pair of trousers with a lace leg, are you?
Some of this high fashion stuff, I'm fascinated by the prices and by the quality. I don't get it, but there you go.
Well, look, we've had someone at New York Fashion Week,
which
is good news. He's come out of retirement. He's been quite busy, but rugby league man is back on the circuit.
I can't believe him. Tremendous.
He's had some issues. He had slight burnout in the fashion world. Is that sort of industry?
Yeah, yes, that's true.
And he took a break. But he's back. He will be
I think
back
it's when he
later.
Appeared from that pub in Russia that finally finished him off. We could hear him in the background.
That's right.
All the customers in the pub were sort of thinking, what on earth is this?
Yes, that's true. I think he decided it was time to retire at that point. They've changed the music at PSG. We'll be finding out a bit more about it. But they used a bit of old Phil Collins. And apparently that kept the crowd at PSG happy. But the person that is now got the new music, he's a big PSG fan, and he didn't want to usurp Phil Collins. He feels very bad about it. So we'll be finding out a little bit more about that later on. And it happens. It happens at all levels. I mean, there's infamous ones, aren't there? Didn't Glenn change it at Chelsea? Put a bit of soft rock on or
jump,
something?
Jump, I think.
He put
by
jump.
Van Halen.
But they soon went back to blue is the colour, didn't they?
It's always better, really, isn't it?
Mike Walker did it. Everton. Joe Royal came.
Don't do the Liquidator anymore.
They still
reason.
Play it? Was it Liquidator they came out to?
Yeah, I think they've stopped. I didn't notice it last night, but there I'll keep an eye out for them.
Mike Walker at Everton and Joe Raw came back in and started Zed Cars again.
Yeah.
So, you know, you
don't
can't...
mess with tradition.
You know, they are real... I mean, you know, they will accept change, most football fans, but some things are sacrosanct, and one is changing the walk on music. So I just wonder, down in the lower reaches, maybe in the world of non-league, this goes on as well. We know the big sort of Premier League level ones, Championship level ones, but what about a bit lower down the footballing food chain? Have you had examples when maybe you're part of a non-league club where someone has said, I think it's about time we updated the music? It's just something you don't do. Let us know your stories this afternoon.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
It's interesting that, isn't it, the strike red card? Mm. Because the player himself, I mean, look, he can't see it. I don't know if he's watched it back. Probably not. It's probably too horrific from his point of view. But it's good they think he's going to play again this year. But for Harvey Elliott to send out that message on social media saying, I didn't think it was a foul or a red card, and yet it's still been upheld. What a PGA moment.
Well, it's odd because the referee didn't send him off on the day. Nobody really protested. They were upset about...
Well, he did send him off, but he wasn't going to.
No, but I mean, he wasn't going to. He didn't even give a free kick, is what I meant. You know, it's an odd one. They're just reacting to the injury rather than the tackle.
But. Yeah. Anyway, good news that he could be back this season. Still to come this afternoon, we will be chatting to Tim Vickery. Another bit of good news that Pelé's on the mend, by the sound of it, his family are saying. So
his foot's for sale, you know.
Not the real thing. You mean like it's a gold cast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a gold sculpture of football legend Pelé's famous left foot. I thought he was right-footed, wasn't he?
is it his famous left foot? Okay, fair enough.
Never mind.
I think he was pretty good with both feet.
He's expected to go up to £5,000.
I couldn't quite work out what... I was trying to find out. There seems to be a lot of conjecture about what size he was, whether he was an 8 or an 8.5.
I'll buy it for you and you can measure.
Yeah, that's a nice touch.
A nice paperweight.
It would be. What you got there, I said, cast of Pelly's foot. Also, later on, we're going to be talking about man-cadding, about moving cricket. That never goes down particularly well. Not seen to be within the spirit of the game. And very few players, very few bowlers maybe do it more than
she
once.
She can't be warning each batsman, I mean, each time she does it.
Well, one player in Cameroon has man-cadded five players in the same game.
I know, she's very good at it. She comes in... She sort of goes right into her action. You think she's going to bowl.
Yeah.
And she gets to the top of her arc of her action. Yeah. And she turns around and just swipes the stumps down. It's brilliant.
It's taking out the... I'm sure you're aware, but it's taking out the batsman at the non-striker's end. So as the batswoman or man advances to... once the ball's... You know, tries to steal a few yards.
Yeah, it's a bit naughty. You get them out.
No, you shouldn't do it. But to do it five times, but more fall... The other team.
Oh, yeah.
We were falling for it five. After the second one, you think, well, we're not going to mess about with her. She'll do it again.
No.
So, anyway, are we in a position to speak to our next guest? No, we're not. Okay, well, we'll just keep plugging away then.
No problem. After that great strike by Andros Townsend, which obviously we know Troy and we're pleased for him, and it was a great goal, wasn't it? But Rafa didn't congratulate him and had a go at him for not staying wide enough. And it just confirms what I've always thought about Rafa Benitez, which is he's a great coach, but an absolutely joyless man who takes no pleasure in football at all. I mean, how could you not think that was a brilliant goal and say...
always been his thing.
But it's the first joyless thing,
whenever his team score a goal, he doesn't celebrate it, he doesn't look particularly happy, he starts coaching. He immediately tells the players what they didn't do.
He's a great coach, and I think Everton have got a terrific... Yeah. chance and they should have a very good season, but I'd like to see him smile occasionally.
It's his shtick though, don't you think? He's always done that, because as soon as his team scores he starts pointing, starts shouting at players and pointing. Maybe that's his way of celebrating.
That's true. I suppose it is, but
Who knows,
you've got to enjoy yourself really. The Queen, she's had a bumper season on the track. Did you see this?
It's fantastic. She's won a lot of prize money, hasn't she?
She has. How much money? She's won $460,000 in 9 months.
As an owner, obviously.
Well, yeah.
As a jockey.
Not as having bets. No, she's just hanging
around.
See her
down Ladbrokes. Anyway, as we couldn't bring you the guest we hoped to, we will now talk about man-cadding. And as I say, it's quite rare that it goes on, but five times from one bowler in the same game. Because a fifth, I think, was added yesterday, we understand. So let's bring you a little bit of commentary now.
Bizarre dismissal. A really bizarre dismissal. Oh, gone again! Well, I tell you what, it's another man-cad. I'm not too sure that Uganda will enjoy that too much. Another one, another run-out. It's another man, Ked. Well, Sean George almost left with no choice. Almost doesn't want to give the dismissal. Oh, it's gone again. It is frustrating. It's the fourth or fifth Mankad. I'm not sure. I've lost count, to be honest.
One giant step for Mankad.
I think it is. The bowler in question is Cameroon's Mava Duma. She's the one who's given
us... your line on her.
Well, yes, Andy Zortzman joins us now, cricket expert, statistician and comedian, of course. Hi, Andy.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
We do look forward to Mava doing the Spirit of Cricket lecture next year. it's a lovely thought.
It is, I mean, it would be a great lecture to hear. We need to give it some kind of context. She's only 16, yeah. And it was the first international match played by Cameroon women. Let's put it down to youthful enthusiasm. But, I mean, the Mankad has been something that's sort of been dividing cricket, well, since it was named after the great Indian all-rounder, Vinu Mankad, which I think went back to, I think, the 47-48 series against Australia. It was quite extraordinary to see the four in one game. It didn't help Cameroon. They still lost to Uganda by 155 runs after disappointingly being bowled out for 35 in a T20 match. So.
Yeah, I mean, at 16, it's amazing that she's got that technique to be able to...
She's got it in her locker.
Yeah. At the top of her arc of her bowling and then sort of switch to suddenly, you know, taking the stumps out. It is considered bad form. I remember Ashwin did it, didn't he? And people really weren't happy about it at all.
Well, I think the reason people don't like it is because, cricket is a contest between a bowler bowling a ball at the batsman, and the Mankad removes the essence of cricket from cricket. But I think if I remember the Ashwin incident with Butler, and Butler was, taking advantage by being a little way down the pitch. So it's just, I think more that it's not sort of necessarily underhand unless there's an element of sort of deception involved in the sort of dummy ball, which isn't, I think, technically allowed. But it's more that it's not what cricket is. It's, you want bowlers to defeat batsmen rather than the ball not even to come into play.
I'd say it would have been a bit eggy in the bar afterwards, don't you think, when they all get back in there saying, you're sticking around for something to eat. Are we sticking around for... What, five Mankads? Was you sticking around for something to eat? You can... Yeah, I mean, it would be an easy conversation.
We don't hear about it much in club cricket. You'd imagine it would cause... Because club cricket, league cricket can be quite narky, as I know for myself. Yeah.
And I'm sure the kind of wisdom will be full of stories of that going on in the lower reaches, Andy.
Yes, you'd think so. I mean, and it does seem to happen more often than it used to. There was the final of the World Under 19 World Cup a few years ago. There was a Mankad that won the match, and it's and you mentioned the Ashwin incident, I think, in the IPL. So, but it is something that happens. I mean, I think it'd be quite easily dealt with if the laws of cricket were tweaked so that the batter at the non-striker's end can't leave the crease until the ball is bowled. And even if it's like a batting no ball, that if you're out of your crease when the ball is bowled, it's a no ball. So I'm not quite sure how they'd adjudicate that. It would be easier with a TV umpire, but obviously not all games have that down in the village leagues. But I think it's kind of self-regulated for a large part by issuing a warning and sort of unofficial warning, and then if you've been warned and you still do it, then you've only got yourself to blame if you're the batsman run out.
I don't know if you're a fan of TikTok, but if you are and you love cricket,
yes,
there are so many brilliant cricket, village cricket, league cricket videos, little videos of sort of terrible batsmen, terrible bowlers, blokes missing the stumps from about 2 inches.
Oh, you showed me an incredible run.
It's quite fun, actually.
Yeah, good source.
I'm not, to be honest, but I think England did their best to add to that run out at the Oval.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When I think they essentially missed the same run out in five different ways in one ball when Rishabh Pant was batting.
It was so crucial as well in that match. It would have made such a difference.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We were talking to Andy Zortzman a little bit earlier on about cricket. Now, beautiful new book, lovely coffee table book. Mm. The Colours of Cricket, a collection of the photographs of seasons. And cricket photographer Philip Brown, and he joins us in the studio. Hi, Philip, good to see you.
Hi there, thanks for having me. I'm not sure what seasoned means.
I could have gone down venerable. I could have gone down. There were so many routes I could have got. Experienced. Yes, it's so. What I mean, you photographed other sport before. When did you kind of tend to focus on cricket, and why?
I think there was a lot of other photographers who suddenly decided they didn't like cricket when they had to get to the ground at 8 in the morning and leave at 8 at night. So I was the schmuck who said, yeah, I don't mind doing that. And all of a sudden I was doing it nearly every day. So, but I did love cricket, but I loved photography more, and all of a sudden that was where I was. But yeah, I haven't done football or rugby or anything for quite a while now. Yeah. I'm quite happy going to the normal places.
Sure.
It's a brilliant montage to show your longevity of sort of accreditation passes. It's fantastic. It's like you over the years. And lots of changing hairstyles. Actually, not.
It gets longer and shorter, but it doesn't... Because you are known for it. Stuart Broad, who wrote the foreword, talks about the shaggy hair. That's always been there, hasn't it?
I've always had hair, and luckily I've still got some.
Yeah.
But, I just thought I'd photograph all the passes, accreditation passes. Mm. I mean, the day I straightened my hair was just a kind of joke, but I did send it into different accreditation places, and they used it. So that wasn't a hairstyle that stayed around for a long time.
Yeah. I once asked a football photographer for some pictures from Benfica Stadium, the Stadium of Light, and he said, they're not my best. He said, the light's not great. But so I just wonder, what is the seriously? What's the best place to photograph cricket? Would you say around the world from a professional's point of view?
I still really enjoy going to Lords. Mm. First went to Lords in '89, and I still get a kind of kick going back to Lords Cricket Ground. I love going to Newlands in Cape Town, where if you get a little bit bored with the cricket, it doesn't happen every day, but you can just look at those beautiful mountains behind. Mm. They're probably the top two.
The light in India, though, is very... When I've been to India a couple of times, I thought from a photographer's point of view, it's such a beautiful light.
But, India and Sri Lanka, I love... I can't think of a place, really, I don't like going to, so maybe Scotland.
It's interesting. There's a shot of the Lord's Pavilion in 2005, and it's so much less diverse than it should be, basically. This is 16 years ago, but it does show you.
Kevin Peterson hitting a six into the members, and basically you've got about 100 members all looking into the sky, hoping that the ball's not about to land on their head.
Yeah. I mean, it's a mixture of kind of great action shots and sort of, classic cricket shots. But as well as that, some lovely off-duty stuff as well. There's a lovely one where Ricky Ponting with his daughter on the pitch, which you say that he loves so much that he asked you for a copy of it.
Yes, he did. And I hear from Ricky's wife that it's in his study now. But it was just a lovely moment after... I don't think Australia won many tests in that series in 2009. I think it was the only test they won at Headingley, but they won at kind of lunchtime, and he wandered across and just grabbed his one-year-old daughter from his wife, and they just kind of played on the outfield while loads of people are calling out, sign this, and come for a selfie. But they were just, the two of them were just interested in each other, and it was a lovely moment.
There are many fine action photos, but I also like, there's a shot of a guy, an MCC blazer, with a telegraph in his pocket. It's a brilliant photo. It says so much about that type of person and that bloke himself. Really.
Yeah. I am attracted to kind of photos of MCC members. Maybe it's the colours again, the egg and bacon colours, but I normally get down to Lords and we'll have a look in the queue before they're allowed in at 8:30 and see if there's any pictures, because there's often kind of strange pictures, but people decked out in their blazers and their matching ties and caps and things.
Fingers is what I can say.
Here's a guy, John Fingleton, one of the old blazers that we've known through the Bunburys.
He's got everything. He's got all
he's the complete egg and bacon.
He's got the pyjamas as well.
Yes, that's true. I suppose it's difficult. There has to be a balance between getting drawn into the game so you kind of lose sight of what you're supposed to be doing. But you do have to get drawn into an extent because, you'll start to second guess where the good vantage points are going to be for photographs based on what's happening in the game.
Yeah, well, I kind of try and predict what's going to happen. For example, the latest series against India, Joe Root goes out to bat and at Trent Bridge and he middles a couple of shots through the covers and you think, he's not getting out. Like, I'm going to move around the side and try and get lovely batting shots of him. And it just so happened when he got to his century, he kind of, for some reason, I think one of his friends or family must have been right behind me and celebrated wildly towards them, which made a good picture as well. But yeah, you do kind of predict, but I don't, I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not kind of, barracking for, for anyone to get a certain score or a certain team because, you know, I'm concentrating on trying to be in the right place and concentrate and not miss a ball. I mean, that's the biggest mistake I can make, to suddenly look up and think, oh, I've missed a ball there. You know, I'll really punish myself that evening if I ever do that.
Sure.
Great sports photos, they are about going that extra mile, aren't they? Coming up with different ways of doing exactly the way you described there.
Yeah, I think so. There's an element of luck in it, but sometimes you do kind of make your own luck. For example, when I went to Bangladesh in 2016, there was one background that would appear at the end of the day where the scoreboard, the sun would set behind it and it'd make the crowd all dark in front. And you just thought, I have to be in position, I have to be scrabbling around the floor and hopefully make that work for the 10 minutes at the end of the day. And luckily, you know, with all the dust flying and stuff and the sun reflected off Shakib Al Hassan's bat, and all of a sudden, you know, I had a really good picture that I was happy with. Second place in that yearly competition. I'm not saying anything about the judges, but maybe they should go and have another look at that.
There's a great one as well of Nick Compton, kind of in the style of his grandfather, the great Dennis Compton. He's the Brill Cream here. He's just kind of hitting the ball with a pavilion in the background. And it's got that kind of, it's that colourised look of an old picture from a cigarette card.
Jimmy,
I mean, was that in post? Is that the way that worked out?
Not too much in post, but we talked about doing that.
That's great.
Yeah, doing the pictures like his grandfather for quite a while, and I kind of went down to Taunton, and Nick, who's a very good photographer in his own right, kind of said, oh, I'm not sure I want to do this. And I said, I've come all this way, and he said, okay, I'll do it. Oh, I'm not sure I want to do this. So it was a kind of to and fro thing that day, but very happy with the results.
That's the thing, isn't it? Cajoling players sometimes into doing that sort of stuff. I mean, that's simply what it is, you know.
Photography. The Monte Fresco.
Yeah, the Monte Fresco score. And I know you know, those guys that can get the players, because I wonder if it's got harder. They worry more about self-image than they probably did back in the day. It was probably a little bit easier. They're a bit more malleable back in the day than they are now, aren't they?
I think there's less of that now. I mean, I don't often, you know, go up to James Anderson and say, I want you to dress up as a clown or anything, because I'm pretty sure. Sure, I know the answer, but yeah, there's not too much of that. But the Compton thing was an obvious thing to do because his grandfather had was famous from these kind of Brill Cream style pictures.
Have you fallen out with any players over the years in the photographer's role? Is that ever an issue or not?
This is a great chance to say no, no.
Oh, that's good.
I don't think I have. I mean, the England squad at the moment are a great bunch of guys, really. I mean, it sounds like I'm making that up, but they are all very approachable, very friendly. You know, we say, you know, because I'm seeing them kind of 150 days a year. They come to training, I'm there. They go to a match, I'm there.
Australian originally, of course. So.
Originally Australian, yeah.
You can still hear a little bit of that.
Can you can you hear it?
Sure, okay. You can. Yeah,
I think I'm more of a man of the world these days.
It's a great shot of Michael Vaughan. Funnily, if we were there that day, the first ever T20 International down at Southampton, and just a shot behind me. It's just a simple shot, but a really nice shot, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm always looking to get a kind of different shot, still working within the, you know, the limitations of you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't go in the dressing room. But you know, there are pictures to be had if you just kind of look away from the action every so often.
I've never seen Greg. Sorry, Paul. Never seen Greg Davis as a very tall W.G. Grace either. That's also a great photo.
I'm kind of surprised that the guy that was at the 2005 Ashes dressed as W.G. Grace turned out to. You know, he's probably won BAFTAs now, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I'll ask the obvious question. Do you have a favourite? Do you have one standout picture? If it's the one you go to and say, that, I think that's my best work.
I've got kind of three that I'm very keen on, but probably if I was pushed to a favourite, it'd be one I took in Sri Lanka in 2011. I'd gone for a walk the night before and the sunset was basically purple. And I thought, what am I doing without a camera? So I said, right, tomorrow night I'm going to be here with a camera, and the sunset was incredible, and two lads were playing, you know, just on goal face there. And, you know, after quite a few shots, I thought, I think I've got that with an amazing sunset silhouette of kind of five people, including these boys playing cricket. Wow. And, I was happy with that, and even happier when I went on to the nearest bar and there was my competitor with a glass of beer. I thought, well, that's made it even more special.
And one of your son playing as well. It was very sweet. So,
did he make it in there?
I hope he did. For Chalfont.
So. Oh, I think that was the team. And he was the last one to arrive, so I think he's too late to make the photo of the celebration. He can be in the next book.
Yeah. Are you planning to go out for the Ashes? Do you know yet?
That's a big question. I'd love to be there, but there's just so much to look at. At the moment, I've got flights booked and I'm hoping to go, but I can imagine going to Brisbane, for example, and not being allowed to move from that state again and watching the rest on.
I mean, if you go there and you quarantine, you can go to the country, I would imagine, but you can't move state to state at the moment.
Yeah, well, there's lots of problems, including cases rising in New South Wales and Victoria. Sure. So,
would you not be in the ECB bubble if that was the case? If you go part of the travelling army, if you're covering the event,
possible, but nothing's set in stone yet. Wow. It's just it's changing day to day. But yeah, hoping to get to the Ashes. I mean, I've covered the Ashes since 1989, so it'd be a sad Ashes without me, I think.
But we hear so much about players being away for a long time and without their families and their mental health. Presumably this is the same for you.
I did do a 2-week quarantine in Brisbane last year. I don't think it sent me over the edge. I walked up and down the room and did 100 kilometres in a hotel room, but that's normal behaviour, isn't it?
Well, Philip, we wish you well with the book. We really appreciate you joining us. If any cricket lovers out there looking for an ideal present, it's published by Pitch. So it's a big old hardback, beautifully illustrated, and wonderful photographs. A lovely book for the cricket lover in your life, Colours of Cricket by Pitch, is available now. Good to see you.
Thank you very much indeed.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good afternoon, it's Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. We're going to talk about a new film now, which has a boxing backdrop, but it is a lot more than a boxing film. It's called The Champion of Auschwitz, and it tells the true story of a Polish boxer, Teddy Pietrzykowski, who was in Auschwitz and fought, if you like, for the entertainment of the guards there. But again, that only really tells part of the story. And here to tell us more about it is Matty Baczewski, who is the director of the film. Matty, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The most amazing thing, it's an amazing story anyway, the fact that the most of it is true. It is quite.
It's not
incredible.
A documentary, is it?
No, this is a dramatic take on his story. But tell us a bit more. Tell us a bit more about him and his story.
Yeah, Teddy Pietrzykowski was a pre-war boxing champion of Warsaw, and in 1940, he was also one of the very first prisoners who arrived to the newly created concentration camp Auschwitz. Actually, he was marked with number 77, so a very, very low number. And he was forced by the authorities of the camp to fight with other prisoners. He was actually the very first boxer who was forced to do that.
He it obviously used that to his advantage. I mean, many of the other prisoners in there said, you fight for us, which I believe is a line in the film. And he did take on Germans and beat Germans. He also fought other Poles and other prisoners in there. But because obviously he needed to be fit and well-fed to do this, he had improved rations, which he then shared amongst his fellow prisoners.
Yes, and that was important in many respects, because, of course, on the one hand, bread was the most important thing. A slice of bread could allow a person to live another day. But there was also another aspect to his duels, to his fights. He brought other prisoners hope, meaning he was winning. He was winning with their perpetrators. He was literally beating Nazis at the camp. So his fights also had this, let's say, symbolic value, because they, in a way, inspired hope that the war could be won.
He wasn't Jewish, was he? So why did he end up in Auschwitz? Why did they round him up?
Actually, at the beginning of the Auschwitz camp, there were few Jewish prisoners. The mass transport that they began in 1942. So at the very beginning, he was one of so-called political prisoners of the Auschwitz camp. And these political prisoners were sportsmen, artists, lawyers, and other people who were perceived as dangerous to the Nazi regime.
It was a German officer, wasn't it, who recognized him as a pre-war, from his pre-war fight career that started this thing.
Yes, that actually happened in the 1943. He's been already, Teddy was at that time already a renowned boxer at the camp, so that his victories were started to be perceived as dangerous by the Gestapo in the camp. So it was actually close to they were close to killing him. And then a strange coincidence happened. One of his fights were observed by a fellow commandant officer from the camp of Neuengamme, who actually was a referee of one of Teddy's fights, I think in 1938 in Poland, in Poznań. So there was a fight where this German referee was present, and then he turned out to be one of the commandants of another camp. So he asked authorities at Auschwitz to transfer Teddy to his camp so that he could continue fighting at his camp.
Wow. Is his story, Matthew, well known in Poland? Is Teddy's story well known there?
I hope so. That now, thanks to the film, it is. But earlier it wasn't. It was known only to fans of boxing and a few historians. So I thought it was quite important to tell this story of the very first boxer who fought for his life.
Yeah.
I mean, these days, sorry, Paul, these days boxers fight about maybe twice a year, three times a year maximum. Yeah. He fought 40 times in 3 years, didn't he?
Some people say that even it was more than 60. Usually those fights happened on Sundays. And there were periods of time when they happened every Sunday. Later on, of course, other boxers were also put in the ring. There were quite a few of them. There was Salamo Grush, the Greek boxer. There was a movie about him in 1989 called The Triumph of Will. There was also Harry Haft, but Teddy was the very first one. In a way, he began the phenomenon of sport in Auschwitz, which made him a bit strange, but was quite prominent.
There were also stories that he was offered, because of his notoriety and what he'd done there was a way out for him. He could have got onto the list that almost made him sort of an honorary German, which would have allowed him possibly to be released, but he refused that. I mean, because he had fought in the siege of Warsaw, he had fought against the Germans, and is this right that he refused the opportunity effectively to get out of the camp?
Yes, he was offered to sign so-called Volksliste, which would actually freed him out of the camp. He did not want to do that. He told them that it was too much of a privilege and he does not deserve such an honor, and he respectfully declined.
It is an amazing story, and I'm sure you're very pleased with the central performance you got from the actor who's playing Teddy.
Oh yes, that was, he was amazing in this role. We approached his role in a way in a like a Hollywood role, meaning we begin our preparations more or less 14 or 15 months before shooting. So Piotr Głowacki, who played Teddy, had over a year to prepare for this role. He trained with his coaches six times per week for 14 months. He has lost almost 25% of his body weight, but the preparations did not only, the diet was, of course, not only the only component of preparation.
Sure.
He had to, in a way, recompose his body to also build some muscle mass to be convincing as a bantamweight boxing champion at Auschwitz.
Yeah, of course, that must be so difficult. You're, you know, you're asking so someone who looked like they're an inmate of a concentration camp, yet fitter than everybody else, and a boxer. So a very difficult thing to do. Yeah.
Finally, where can people see the film?
As far as I know, you can see it in the UK and in Ireland. We are thinking about the premiere in the US, but maybe that will happen next spring.
Yeah, it's at cinemas, and I would imagine the streaming services will be showing it as well, so it should be available if you can't get to a cinema at the moment. But very powerful story. It's great that that Teddy's story is being told, and we won't give, you know, we don't have a spoiler, but I think people will be interested to see how his story develops. But good to talk to you, Matty. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good afternoon, Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport. We'll have another Paddy's Challenge a little bit later on with Tim Vickery. Will be joining us with the very latest from South America. And we'll be continuing our build-up to the Champions League games. We'll be in Milan with football writer Sheridan Bird. Liverpool taking on Milan. Of course, Adrian will be at Anfield this evening. Keep you in touch with all the games in the Champions League and the EFL. And, of course, Inter play Real Madrid.
Unlikely to be 3-0 down at half time.
No, I'd be very, very surprised. No Zlatan, which is a bit of a blow, isn't it?
No, that's true. They're going for a youth policy. They're replacing him with Giroud.
That's right. It looks like he's going to play. It's interesting that the movement, Ronaldo's movement for the goal, Manchester United's first goal, did have that sort of similarity of Zlatan. They've just got all that experience. They just know where to pop up. It was a fantastic ball, of course. Yeah. But just instinctively knowing the best player. You were saying to me that Zlatan's movement for a goal he scored for Milan the other day.
Yeah, no,
he's just ghosted
brilliant.
In. Very good.
Some bloke rang up breakfast and said, "Well, look, you know, don't ever go, Ollie. If Wan-Bissaka hadn't been sent off, and if Lingard hadn't made that pass, United would have won." You think, well, you can't really say that about. You say that about any game,
not
couldn't
the way
you? Really,
sport works. No, exactly.
Did you see that Mike Parry, formerly of this parish, is selling his famous cinnamon clip? You know that clip.
Selling it.
Yeah, as a non-fungible token. So, you know, he says you'll own the broadcast.
It's almost worth getting Mike on to explain what a non-fungible token is. I mean, he could do 10 minutes and we'd be none the wiser.
No, absolutely.
Can you think of anybody worse to explain what it actually is? So maybe we will. So he thinks this could be, it could be the making.
It's a brilliant clip.
It does get. I showed it to someone from overseas a little while ago who was a bit nonplussed by it.
It's funny, though, isn't it?
It is. It's very funny. Yeah.
Ludicrous. We were talking just, we didn't have a chance to finish it. The Queen's had a bumper season on the track.
As an owner, not a jockey. Yes,
not only that, her five-a-side team won the Power League. She's tremendous.
She's doing very, very well. That's right.
No problem at all.
Do you know, remember Achi Rialati played for Palace? Remember him?
Yes. Yeah. I remember the name.
Finnish player. He's been in Finland Strictly Come Dancing.
Has he?
Yeah. He's doing all right, apparently.
Who knew?
Yeah. They were asking him to do a sliding tackle as part of a routine, because you have to do a little bit of what you did. You know, if you're a cricketer, Goffey almost certainly had to bowl in one routine, or Ramps did. So, but yeah, they asked him to do a sliding tackle. But I think he's doing quite well in it. He's been doing okay. So there we are. It's going well for Palace. What with that and the result of the weekend.
It is funny. When I've seen one of the columnists today in the Mail has basically accused Gary Lineker of appropriating Emma Raducanu. You think, yeah, that's the paper that's got at least six pages on her today. She's going to do well to not survive, but to just not be affected by all this. It's very difficult, you know, people talking about the jewellery she was wearing at this thing, how much it was and all this stuff, you know. Let's hope she is well grounded because she's going to need
to
be.
She seems it. Yeah. She does seem it, doesn't she? But it's going to be an awful lot of pressure on her, certainly.
This was good. 1 in 10 gym goers, male or female, do you see this in the Sun this morning, have experienced an orgasm while exercising.
Oh, blimey, okay, we'll be going with this.
Well, no, I was thinking I must be doing something wrong. It's never happened to me.
Okay, you're probably going to the wrong gym, Andy. I imagine that's what it is. Yeah, we won't go into any more detail.
No, I didn't want to go into any more detail. Yeah. I thought I'd mention it.
Okay, well, thank you for doing so.
Oh, good. And would you pay £200 for a replica of your dog, Molly?
In what sense, a replica?
Did you see this woman who was a dog owner paid £200 for a replica of her Shih Tzu, but got back a horrible teddy. Rebecca McCann, 47, wanted a handmade memento as Larry's days are numbered. Oh. She was horrified with what came back.
Larry's days are numbered. Does it mean...
Well, he's on his way out, I suppose. He's probably old.
Oh, OK. So this is not a taxidermy thing. No. I don't like the idea of Larry going early so it can be turned into a 200 quid.
No. I mean, basically...
It's a likeness of.
Yeah, it's like people... I mean, you've seen people have... paintings of their pets, which is quite a nice thing, you know. But no,
have you got a picture of what came back? Or
it's in the Sun. It's not very good. It looks like one of those ones you win at a fairground.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't look anything like the dog at all.
Oh, okay. So,
it's a US firm called Petsy's, apparently.
I'm sure a lot of their other work's excellent before they come after us. They just had one bad day. Who knows? All their other work might be uncanny. But the idea of doing it before the dog's even gone does feel a bit weird. I've bought this in preparation for when you die. I mean, the dog's sitting thinking, shut up and give me a biscuit.
So I always like it in a match report when the reporter feels he starts off with a sort of analogy and then he has to follow it through. So this is Andrew Dillon. He was talking about Tuchel last night. He said, it's unusual to see a fully grown German man slapping his thighs and shouting loudly. But this was not Tuchel enjoying a traditional night of entertainment back in his homeland while dressed in leather shorts. Tuchel admitted that last weekend that Lukaku got his team out of jail against Aston Villa. He did it again last night and Tottenham away on Sunday. And there's every chance that it could make Tuchel go the full Lederhosen.
Really? You think he might?
Well, I doubt it. Yeah. You imagine that'd be great at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, turn out in the full thing.
Pep used to when he was at Bayern.
Well, yeah, but they only did that when they had their big sort of celebration of winning the title. He didn't wear it for regular games. He didn't go out for the away at Leverkusen in full Lederhosen.
He still make it like that. He wears the club sweatshirt and it still looks cool.
He's got he makes it look good. Yeah, he's got the old fried egg badge on there. He had that on the other day. It's a good looking top there, isn't it?
He's amazing.
Yeah, a bit of a clothes horse. And anyway, making a return after 3 years, apparently.
Oh, good.
Because he got off the fashion scene. He got off the fashion merry-go-round because it was too much for him. He was going to show after show. He was travelling the world. Obviously,
he was suffering from burnout.
Yeah, he was. The virus didn't help him. But when we turned to high fashion, we turned to our old friend Rugby League Man, who would attend all these events on our behalf and tell us what was going on trends-wise. Well, we're very pleased to say he called us the other week. And he's back on the circuit.
Tremendous.
And he's been in New York for New York Fashion Week, where all the talk has been about footwear, boots in particular. So take it away. Great to hear from you again. Rugby League, man.
Yes, I'm back after 3 years away, interning at some of the best fashion houses around the world. Dolce & Gabbana, Givenchy, Untucked Shirts. I've been working at them all, but I'm back, and it's all about boots, boots, boots at New York Fashion Week. I really don't know where you've been if you haven't got yourself a great pair already, but Marta suggests you get with the programme and embrace the best perma trend of recent years. Chunky boots can dial down a dress whilst also dialing up jeans. My favourites are Russell and Bromley's Tan 4 Snakeskin Chelsea's. But for a classic on a budget, try Marks and Spencer. If you go sleek, you can present as polished in a frock without running the risk of looking frumpy. Our kit has a good choice of black ankle and knee-high options, whereas sleek and sparkly takes things to another level with the boot of dreams from Jimmy Choo.
Boots and all, he'll be on.
Boots, he will be on. Boots and all, he's going to get his own show. That'd be fantastic. Well, it's great to have Rugby League Man back. He'll be touring all the fashion shows. You see Larry David in the front row of New York Fashion Week. He didn't look massively engaged.
That doesn't seem his thing at all.
He's just kind of sit there, sort of leaning on his elbows. He didn't look like he was.
Well, that's a bit of research.
He completely bought into it. He was at the tennis. He's been. You see, he was at the Raducanu Games at the US Open as well. So he's been putting himself about a bit.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon show. Charlie Baker with me tomorrow. Henry Blofeld, Josh Widdicombe joining us. You'll be back for the birthday spread if you can find the jokes. He's lost the jokes, folks. Join us if you can. If not, podcast available around 4:30.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.